get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have guest Luke Jordan. Now, if you're not following Luke on Twitter already, make sure you go follow him after this podcast or before at LR_Jordan, where he shares a lot of his case studies in real time, so not after they've been completed. Since as he's doing them, he'll post his updates there, so you never know if they're actually going to work out, and he has a lot of great information. But within this podcast, we actually dive into some of these case studies that just finished and some of his case studies that he's doing currently. So the main one is his large website, which is bringing in around 1 million visitors per month. And we go through some of the processes that he's used to do that, how he's currently building that website, and then how he's diversifying that website as well, looking to add things like email marketing. Now he's got a couple of YouTube channels to help diversify that traffic and the income. We also cover a lot about his backlinking strategy. So he puts down a lot of the success to this website down to links. And we cover a lot of his outreach strategy, what he's looking for in other sites. And one of his recent case studies he tried in terms of getting links at a very low budget. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Luke Jordan with us. How are you going, Luke?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I hope you're well as well.
Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. So I've been following you, I guess, on Twitter for a little while now, seeing a bunch of different, I guess, case studies, screenshots, things you're doing. So maybe just for the listeners, maybe just provide a brief background about yourself, how you got into this idea of building niche websites, and then we can dive into some of your websites after that.
Sure. I have been in like SEO and websites and stuff for maybe 10 or 11 years now. And the first job that I actually had, despite it being terrible, did sort of teach me SEO and a whole load of things with it. I used to upload products to the website. I'd do email marketing. I would answer the phone. I'd do the PPC. I'd spam blog posts and press releases out. Like, I'd do absolutely everything basically. So even though it was a horrible place to work, it at least gave me an introduction to the things I needed to know and sort of taught me that I like doing a variety of different things to try and grow websites and stuff. I spoke previously before on YouTube and stuff about the biggest project that I had, that I was like the public face of it. I was the name behind it, so you can dig that site out, although I don't talk about it much. But that was like a niche site, YouTube channel, the works really, but something that I just grew up myself, starting with a £100 budget and eventually sold for six figures. From there, I started like buying up other people's websites and found really quick ways to make them make more money, get more traffic, but ultimately wasn't particularly high quality stuff. It was just, I was buying what I would call unloved sites, like sites that people hadn't touched for a few years, and they just needed like completely remaking, but all I would do is just update their reviews to say it was the current year and add a load more CTAs and just watch the revenue go up, and that perhaps deservedly so came crashing down. And it left me at a little bit of a crossroads because I didn't know where to go or what to do. I didn't want to go back to work. I'd sold my site that I was the face of, I don't know if it was about a year before, maybe about 10 months before, something like that, as we still had some money in the bank to do something, but I didn't want to just, you know, start other sites like the ones I was buying or buy other sites and really go crazy on trying to do stuff. So I basically just decided I was going to have one last attempt at trying to do something crazy. And I just picked one of the sites that we had and tried to save it and tried to turn it into, I don't know, like a powerhouse media company eventually. And that's what the case study is that I'm doing now. It's about a year and a half in. I can't even remember. Can't remember how far we're into this case study now, but yeah, time's flying on it. But yeah, all we pretty much do is publish articles, and we just started on YouTube fairly recently.
Nice. So that first site that you sold, did you start that while you were working full time?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I was working for an SEO agency at the time. So I've had two jobs pretty much. Like, one was in-house doing everything, and then the next one was agency side. So I got sort of a spread of experience. But whilst I was at the agency, I started the site. I never started it intending to, like, I wasn't like looking for a niche and trying to spin up a niche site on the side. I just started it because I found it and I was interested in the topic, and I just started the site. And I'd made other websites before and put affiliate links on them and stuff, so I knew what I was doing, but initially it wasn't let's start a site and try and make loads of money from it. It just happened to start making money, and then I was like, oh, let's go down this path a bit further.
Nice. So did the way or your processes change or evolve from, say, that website to now where you have this big case study website? Are you doing anything differently on this new website?
Yeah, I would say massively differently. So I wrote all the content on that last site to start with, and then eventually started to hire other people, and I would look over the content and improve it. And on this project, I actually started this with the intention of never writing a single word, so it was all outsourced, and the process we use is like a no bottlenecks model, so we're not a content mill like most niche sites would be, or many agencies also run like the content mill approach of having someone that does keyword research, someone that writes the articles, someone that uploads them and formats them, someone that adds links in the stuff and then publishes. We just give responsibility to the writer. They can take full ownership. They can publish straight to the site if they want. They could publish an article on my website right now telling the whole world that I'm a horrible person. but that's just how you have to operate if you don't want bottlenecks. And if you don't want other people holding the process up. So yeah, it's a completely different setup that we operate with now. And it's definitely a different setup that most people probably wouldn't go for, I'd say.
Yeah, because I guess a lot of people have difficulties or challenges giving up control of their websites already. You know, having another writer write content, sometimes it can be a little iffy, but then giving them full access to be able to just publish anytime and do their own keyword research and stuff. But at the same time, that gives you some more hands off. You have more time for yourself. You can spend that time working on the business instead of trying to manage everyone too.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a control thing, and you got to have a lot of trust, and I think it's all in the training, right? Like, as long as you train them well enough, then you've got to trust them after that. But I can't remember what book I read a while ago. I should really remember because I barely read any of them. But it was talking about like delegating not being a particularly good thing, and like you should give people responsibility if you ever want to like truly be hands off. You don't want to be delegating. You want to giving people the power to make decisions and take action.
So let's then dive into the site a bit deeper then. So maybe do you want to run through where it's at now regarding what if you're comfortable enough with sharing? So maybe if you're comfortable enough, niche, current, maybe traffic, current articles, monetization, how it's monetized, things like that, and maybe how it was when you first got it as well. So just get a general idea of the growth and the things you've done.
Okay, so like timeline wise, like I actually, this was one of the sites that I bought off someone else when we'd sold like our site, and it cost me around $9,000. Wasn't like particularly expensive.
So like a real starter site.
Yeah, it had like, I can't remember how many articles, 50 to 100 articles already on it. It was earning around $300 a month, and it was 100% Amazon affiliate. So it was all just the best this product, the best that product, within a specific niche. And obviously I started to grow it, and then it crashed, and it was just the site that I had that I was the most interested in. And prior to everything getting demolished, we had started to put informational posts on this with the plan of getting monetized with display ads, because that's not something that I've ever done before, or very rarely done, not had much success with. But I knew that I didn't want to be relying on affiliate, and especially Amazon, prior to the first product reviews update. Or, sorry, I should say the December 2020 core update. That's a bit of a tinfoil hat thing from me, that I think the product update rolled out then. where was I? So we'd started like putting info posts onto this site and started to see a bit of traction. So when we bought it, we were getting like 100 visits a day. And then over the course of about 5 or 6 months of adding a load of informational content to it, we'd got up to a peak of 7,000 visitors in a day. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's quite an old domain.
Was that the plan in the beginning, to throw informational content on there from the start, or was the site getting absolutely trashed by Google the catalyst for that?
No, so this was before. So this was in the July of 2020. We started to put informational content on the site, and then in December of 2020 is when the site got hit. However, the articles weren't exactly amazing. We were just thinking, let's just get a load of content written. We didn't write loads. It was probably 200-300 posts, something like that, from memory. My numbers could be way off, but something like that. Then we got hit, and then I had like a couple of months of just thinking, what do we do now? Trying to work out whether I got a job and went back to work, or whether I focused on the site, and eventually just decided to go with this. So we started like improving the content that we had, deleted a load of content. We ended up rebranding the site and relaunching it under a new name, a new domain, completely new design and everything. That was last May, so May 2021. Since then, from May 2021, it got April 2021, it got 30,000 sessions, and then in October 2021, it got 1,162,000. Cool.
It was crazy
turnaround in terms of just how fast we saw things. And we got like a couple of writers on board, but as soon as we started to see like the slightest bit of traction, I immediately hired more. And I was just going at this like, this is my last chance to make a big site. We've got some money in the bank. I'm not looking to reinvest profits here. I'm looking to invest what we have in the bank. I'm trying to spend more than we're earning. And eventually at October time, it got to the point where I couldn't actually invest more than we were earning, because obviously the earnings were quite good. I don't like talking about revenue before. I have shared the revenue number from October before, but I prefer to talk in profit and loss, because loads of people share their revenue. My strategy is to try and not make any profit. We try and constantly reinvest what we're earning. So I could give you the craziest numbers ever, but we don't make any profit. So that's what people need to know, is to grow a site. Well, to grow this site, loads of people grow big sites, right? But to grow my specific site, so far, it has taken a lot of initial investment and reinvestment into new content. So just to get you that output number, we're at, like, since I acquired the site, we've published an additional 1,533 posts, not including some that we removed. So maybe like 1,700 in total, something like that.
Wow. Okay, that's a fair whack then.
I'm aware I'm bombarding you with information here. I'll just butt in and cut me off. Just say stop talking.
I've got one question. No, it's good. It's good. You can keep going, but I've got one question first.
Yeah.
Going back, because you mentioned, I guess, the first batch of info articles, you mentioned that were average and you kind of removed some and improved it. What was your process for improving the content, and what, in your eyes, was the, like, what did you see with this content that wasn't good?
I think the main thing is, like, knowing the subject. So we were just putting content up because people were searching for it, and it's like, well, let's just throw up a guide to this, or we'll answer this question because we know we can rank, we know what to do to rank, and we can pretty much put whatever we want up. It's not to say the answers were terrible, but because I was interested in it, when I read them back, I was like, oh, I think we could actually do more to really explain this to someone that doesn't know what to do, and we can go into extra detail about specific things, not off-topic stuff. Like, I hate it when guides add loads of off-topic stuff or like slightly relevant stuff just to pad an article out. We always keep it super relevant, but add as much stuff as we can that is genuinely useful. I think that's what we were missing, is like trying to be the best guide we could rather than just a guide.
Is this a niche that you have some form of expertise or experience in, that you could identify that, or is it just kind of like it was general knowledge that
an interest, I would say.
Okay.
Not expertise. Maybe I'm getting towards expertise, but it'll probably take me another year or two. But definitely like a long-standing interest. Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. So, do you want to jump back into your numbers then?
Yeah, sure. So in 2020, like when we started it, again, we did remove some posts, and I can't remember for the life of me how many it was. I think we moved like removed about 100 or 150, but I might have publicly said before it was 50. I might have said 200. I don't know. So
somewhere
it was
in
like,
that range.
Yeah, it was like a reasonably substantial portion of our site at the time.
But was there a reason that they were removed instead of improved?
Yeah, so I think we'd gone with too like much of a scattergun approach of just trying to hit loads of different topics. And I felt at the time that we were rebranding the site and stuff that we should have like a really clear focus, like this is what we cover. And that was going to be sort of our way of trying to recover, was having this core focus, and maybe we cover some stuff around that. But we were like, we're in this big niche, and we were just going, oh, we'll do some of this, we'll do some of this, let's get some views over here, let's just go for everything we can. And it worked initially, but then it didn't. So what I did was like narrow down what we actually focus on, and just removed some of the stuff that wasn't relevant. I did keep the stuff that was still getting traffic, but if stuff wasn't relevant and wasn't getting traffic and didn't have links, then I removed it.
Gotcha.
So in 2020, when we started this, we still have 360 posts live that we got up in 6 months or so. In 2021, we published 643. So not at, like, kind of a similar amount extrapolated, if that's the word. I don't know if that's the word. but that's because at the start of 2021, obviously, we rebranded in May of 2021. We didn't know what we were doing for a bit. We didn't know if we were actually going to continue. We wanted to start slow. So the first 6 months of that were like eight. We had eight posts in the January. We had 12 posts in the April. But then in the September, we had 136. In October, we had 131. So we were like starting to ramp up seriously at the end of the year. So 643 posts we published in 2021. And then in 2022, so far, up to the end of May, we've done 530.
Damn.
So I think we'll do 1,500. I think we'll do 1,500 plus this year, just because we're starting to scale up more.
You basically got unlimited keywords you can touch in this niche?
Yeah, kind of. Not unlimited, but I could. I think maybe 10,000 articles might be the yeah. max potentially. So there's a lot. It's a big old niche. Yeah, it's a big old niche.
Does that say 10,000 as a ballpark figure? Does that include expanding out into those, I guess, those non-relevant but kind of shoulder niches that you removed initially?
Kind of, yeah. Not fully, but like definitely starting to... We've already moved away from the core area and sort of we're in a broader area, but we're certainly not as scattergun as we were before. We pretty much know if we see a topic like, oh yeah, that's something for us or that's not something for us. And we do have rules, even though there are relevant ideas, we do have rules like that's not something we would touch at this time.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, but gotcha. Within the 10,000, I would say no, not, it's not just cover everything. It's still within our area.
So within your content process then, because you mentioned obviously, in the beginning, it was a scattergun approach. You were kind of hitting all different topics randomly. So does that mean now you've drilled down and you have your writers essentially only write on the one, say, silo or topic on the site and fill that first before you move on? Or are you covering maybe two or three of your real core topics at once?
I mean, we're definitely covering multiple topics at gotcha. Once. I think I actually hired someone to manage the content side of things that started on the 1st of June. I don't know when this will go out, but we're recording this on the 8th of June, so yeah. A week ago. But I did see today that like 3 or 4 new users have been added in WordPress. So like there's writers at the moment for the first time that they're going to be covering content that I didn't plan and I didn't hire and train the writer. So I don't even know what they're covering at the minute. But obviously it'd be on the strategy. But like I think before those hires, we were at around 13, I think. Like writers full-time and part-time, so we cover probably 4 or 5 areas at a time, and some are like super long-term, they have hundreds and hundreds of ideas in. So we'll just do a few and then come back to it and dip in and out, or like when we bring new writers on, we'll get them to cover a bit of that and then train up covering that stuff and then move on to other stuff. But yeah, we try to, if we cover a new area, we do try and cover it in a decent amount of detail before we would move on.
Gotcha. And then how strict is your internal linking strategy, or do you have a strategy, or is it just wherever is relevant you link around the site, or is it okay, this silo links within itself and then this one links within itself?
Generally, we only link within silos. There are obviously times when that isn't strictly the case. Like there'll be the odd occasion where something is really relevant to reference to it'd be really relevant to reference something specific to a user, so we will link it. It's not like we're that strict that we won't reference something if it's highly relevant, but in general, yeah, we link or we try to link 2+ times in every post to something from the same category. And then we have like related posts or whatever that show 6 related posts from the same category as well. What we do have is within our content tracking, we use Notion. The writers upload like the title of their post and how many words they did in the URL and stuff. But they have a box to tick off, which is for links. And it's like, if you didn't include 2 internal links in this, then don't tick the box off. Because then we have this ongoing filter where we can look back at any point and we can be like, these are all our posts that don't have 2 internal links, because that it can be tricky to add internal links when you start covering a subject for the first time, because there's nothing else relevant to link to. But when there's a whole load of writers churning out content, it's hard to keep track of everything. So yeah, that's we do pay a lot of attention to internal links. I would say I think they're massively underrated.
Gotcha. So then I've got a couple of questions to add on to this. First one is, what do you think has brought you the success to this website? Because this is not like a typical niche website where someone's getting maybe 50 or 100,000 page views and, you know, maybe makes a low 5 figures. This is, you know, millions of page views a month. This is I guess you could say, big brand kind of thing that you mentioned at the beginning. So what do you think is that differentiator in terms of success with this site?
Links.
Links.
To put it simply, people don't like it. People don't like hearing it. I've realized that if you tell people they need links, that it's not good. Like on Twitter especially, I've noticed that if people say you don't need links, then everyone loves it. And if you go, now you do need links, then people don't listen. People like to hear what they want to hear, right? Yeah. But so when we relaunched the site, there are two things. Focus, like intense focus on just doing what works and doing it over and over and over again, and reinvesting our money and continuing to just keep doing what we're doing at scale and try and do it at a bigger scale. And then links. So we did like a few different campaigns when we first rebranded with like a fairly limited budget. They were all like $1,500 or less, which is okay, not that limited of a budget, but some were $1,500, some were $150, some were nothing. It's a lot cheaper than paying an agency. Mm-hmm. And like two or three of them just took off like really well. So we ended up getting links from a load of our big competitors that get like tens of millions of visitors a month and newspapers around the world and stuff. And I certainly don't think we'd be where we were without them.
Gotcha. So how did you structure your outreach strategy then? Because I'm assuming, was it you that did the outreach, or did you hire someone to do the outreach for you?
No, I did it myself.
Did it yourself?
Yeah. So structuring it.
So kind of like,
what do you mean by structure it? Like,
so how did you vet or choose the sites that you outreach to? And then I guess maybe for people who are looking to do this themselves, how did you structure the emails to get the responses back? Because I know, I guess that's almost one of the points that stops people from doing it, is the fact that they send out emails and maybe only get one reply, if that.
Yeah, it's really demotivating. Fortunately, I'm in a niche where creating creative content is quite easy, and sites are happy to share stuff a little bit more often. If you're talking about really dry subjects, it can obviously be a lot tougher. And then there's certain random niches where people will just want paying for links a lot. Like we've never paid for a link on this site. I'm just looking back now in my outreach campaigns to see like what we did. So I had five different lists of sites for like the first campaign that we did. I had like big sites. In fact, I'll come back to big sites.
All right.
So I had like design sites. So this was like a design piece. So I wanted to outreach to sites that actually weren't in our niche, but they shared stuff that was nice designs. I had shared similar. So I used different tools to find websites and articles and writers that had covered similar things, if not like obviously not the same thing, but they'd shared similar things previously, similar topics, similar ideas. They're obviously interested in it. I had a broken links one, which I can't even remember. Like, I'm not a broken link builder. I think if from memory, I think there was a similar sort of campaign, like along the same sort of topic to us. And it was casino based, and they'd redirected it to like their random casino site, like SEOs do. They get some links, yeah. They 301 redirect it to their money pages. And I just outreached those sites and I was like, oh, just so you know, they did something really scummy. So do you want to update the link to us? Don't think that worked too well.
It's crazy because if I got that email, I'd be like, hell yeah, I'll update the link. And they're just like happy to link to casinos instead.
I think a couple of them did take it down. Already linking to the casino. So it was like on the casino blog or whatever. And then they just redirected it to their games. I then had a miscellaneous sites list, which looks like it was just kind of sites that share fun things, creative things, random stuff like Reddit in there as well, obviously trying to seed some stuff. And then I had a big sites list, so that's the first one I mentioned. Something I did at the start of this before we rebranded was I made a list of 100 websites that I want to be featured on one day, like dream list, regardless of what the site is. These are 100 amazing websites to get featured on. So that list is just those 100. Probably about 10 to 15 of them are in our niche. Mm-hmm. Probably another 10 to 15 are, you know, the BBC and the Washington Post. Is that the name of the paper? I don't even remember. that sort of stuff. And it's just basically 100 sites that are like amazing sites. Obviously couldn't outreach to all of them because some of them aren't relevant at all. Like I can see some in here. One is, where did it go? It was a finance site. I know that. Like the Motley Fool, fool.com. Like it's investment related stuff. But what that exercise did of having these 100 sites was we could break them down by what type of site they were. And then we could think, what would we need to share for that specific site or for that group of sites to link to us? So I've never outreached to fool.com. But if I did, I would have to create a piece of content similar to what we cover, but with an investment related angle or financial related angle.
Yeah.
So that already gives me ideas of, oh, I could do this related to money or earning money or whatever. How did I find the people and email them? I just went through the website manually and looked for people that cover it, then go digging through for their email using tools. I really do a lot of manual effort to try and find people's email addresses. I go to the lengths of going on their Twitter, getting copy and paste their handle, and then put it in search just with their name plus email and see if they've ever tweeted someone saying, email me. Like, here's my email address. It's a lot of manual work. And then I'll just reach out to most of them. I just say, I think you'll like this. This is what it is. Have a look. I don't like small talk, and I don't want to waste people's time, and I don't want to lie to them and say, I really enjoy your work. I check out your articles all the time. Because I get emails like that, and there's no way they've been reading our recent stuff. I don't understand why they're saying they have. Most of the time, if you're reaching out to big journalists, you're doing their job for them. So just keep it short and sweet and just be like, this is something you like and your audience will engage with it. Check it out here. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you want me to send the images over. And if I can answer any questions or if I can give you any quotes, I'll be happy to do so. That type of thing. I made that sound like a really long email, but a really short email.
But
sites get different emails.
Did you also then... It sounds like it's like journalist outreach is essentially like you doing the outreach instead of Harrow bringing or help a reporter out bringing the journalist to you. So did you also go down that approach with Harrow link building, or was it just pure outreach to these people?
Yeah, we've dabbled in Harrow. I think it's not what it used to be. There's like a lot of spam. Like I see a load of stuff that's just send us this free gift and we'll link to you. And yeah, we've answered the odd question here and there on Harrow, but in terms of links from it, probably 10 at most. Definitely not the level of links that we've got from these other sites. I don't want to make out we've had thousands of links, because loads of sites get thousands of links. I only track the good ones that we get, but we've had like 150 or 200 links in total, I think. From decent sites, like really good sites.
So what do you count as a decent site? Because obviously you have multiple lists. So even like your miscellaneous list, you have that design list and I think some other ones that are in your niche. So what's like your minimum threshold? Are you looking at traffic, DADR, or something else?
Honestly, I just looked. It was only 116 links that we've had that I've tracked as a good link. It kind of is traffic, kind of DR, kind of have I heard of them before?
Yeah.
There's a lot of foreign sites that come up that I've never heard of. Sorry.
So does the site look like legit, or does it just look like another affiliate marketer just spamming some stuff together?
So I wouldn't be tracking a link from someone else's small little niche site where they're just churning content out. or like the Harrow. So a lot of people on that have niche sites use Harrow for free content ideas and free content input. They just copy and paste the answers and stick articles live. In general, I would say organic traffic is what I would use as a good gauge, but there are AI sites and stuff that get loads of traffic that clearly aren't a good site, so I wouldn't be reaching out to them or claiming them as a good link. Yep.
No, fair enough. You also talked about, so you mentioned you have that design list, so obviously you're reaching out with custom graphics or something like that, but you also mentioned that I guess they're not, those design sites aren't in your niche, correct? They're essentially designed. So where does your thought process lie regarding, I guess, the relevancy of the link versus the authority of a link, say? Because obviously you reach out to these design sites getting links, but they're not relevant to maybe the niche that you're in. So do you see that as a viable strategy? Obviously it's working for you now, but what was the reasoning behind doing that versus just staying within the lane of the niche?
Well, I think, firstly, these are really big websites. So the fact that they speak about design stuff, obviously that plays a big part, but these aren't just loads and loads of tiny design blogs and stuff. These are just pretty much the biggest design sites in the world, and that's it. I can see there's only 10 sites in that list. The logic behind reaching out to them is, yeah, their domain won't be relevant, but the post that they write would be. They would talk about like what we've done, the title, the wording around what they write about would be relevant. And yeah, it's just a small part of the campaign. This was just for aiming for. We didn't even get any links from these sites, but it was aiming for obviously a maximum of 10. I've reached out to 10. So as it can always snowball, and other design sites can pick it up that you didn't contact, because that's what happened with this one. Like a big news site that we didn't actually contact picked it up from somewhere else. They published it, and then a load of sites found it on there and published it as well. But yeah, I think that's the main thing, is that a natural backlink profile isn't 100% highly relevant links. Websites do talk about stuff that isn't in their niche. Like a design site, if a sports company rebrands, a design site might talk about that sports, their new sports logo or whatever. It doesn't mean that's a really bad link for that site to get. It's still a good link. It's just not the dream link of the same niche and high authority, but it's still a high authority link. It's not a niche edit stuffed into a random post. It's a post about you and about your content and stuff. So I definitely think it still has value, just not the most value possible.
Gotcha. So then how are you deciding what pages on your website you want linked to? Is it down to, I guess, the difficulty of the keywords you're trying to rank? Or are you looking at maybe linking to essentially like hub pages that link out to multiple pages on your site? And secondly, before I finish that question, do you have an anchor text preference linking back to your site? Are you looking at exact matching the keywords you're trying to rank for, or looking at brand, or are you mixing things up?
So on this site, I don't outreach for stuff that isn't something that's worth sharing. So I don't outreach for our random info posts. I don't outreach for our hubs. It's just the only time I ever do outreach is we made this really cool thing that I genuinely think your audience will like, or you might be able to write an article about and save yourself a couple of hours looking for a story today. So they only link to the cool piece that we created, or our homepage, or both. Obviously, within our creative piece, we then use internal links to funnel like link juice back into our good stuff. But yeah, in terms of anchor text and stuff like that, that's stuff for my old sites. I don't try and do anything now that could potentially land me in hot water. Certainly if I was doing that, I would be doing brand, like heavy brand, just always ideal link is just my brand name or something that's like a partial match keyword with the brand name in as well. But yeah, just the only links we get, essentially, or 95% of the links we get, are to our creative campaigns.
Gotcha. Were these design sets, were these part of your recent outreach case study you did on Twitter? The one where you, I think it was a, was that the design? No, different one?
That was a different one, yeah.
Gotcha. Do you want to maybe dive into that, the one you posted on Twitter recently?
Sure, yeah. So I always do stupid things where I tweet before I think, and I tweeted saying that I'd got an idea for a link build, a bit of link building. It was time sensitive and I was just going to rush it out on like a shoestring budget. I think my budget was $50. I actually ended up spending $52.50. So shocking.
Sounds failed.
Yeah. And I just said I would report back with the results. And I knew it wasn't the best idea in the world, but obviously $52.50, it took like a day and a half of my time, I think, to... So what I did was I went out based on this idea, and my idea was basically, I wonder what the data is for X, Y, and Z. No one had compiled the data because it was time sensitive. It was something kind of new. So I went out and I manually checked the data for hundreds of different things and just filled out a spreadsheet. There's probably smarter ways of doing it, but I don't know Python and all that stuff. So I just manually did everything. Genuinely, I think some manual work or a lot of manual work would have been involved either way, because the accuracy of the data was super important. As I say, nowhere else had already compiled this. I then found stories within the data. So that's the important thing as a marketer. If the data doesn't say what you want it to say, which fortunately it did in this case, but if the data doesn't say what you want it to say, you've got to find a story somewhere. Like, what can you get out of it? Well, the story is there's no story. Like, there's no shock here, but fortunately in the data that I had, it was, I can't obviously reveal too much without giving specifics away, but there was like a, isn't this statistic really surprising, let's say, that a lot of people or a lot of journalists would be interested in. So I then put the data into a graphic, like a literally just a little infographic type thing, not actually like a traditional infographic, but just the stats in a nice image, or it was like three images. Paid someone $50 for that on Upwork. And then I just emailed the journalists that had covered similar stuff. As I say, it was time sensitive, so a lot of journalists were writing about something really specific. And I just outreached to all of them saying, I saw you've covered this. Here's a really interesting statistic for you. And if you're interested in that, we've got 10 others in this post that are all brand new data. The data's public. You can see it all. And here's these images if you want to use them. It didn't go very well. It got one link from, so I'm just checking now, one link from a DR85 site, which is pretty good.
Hey, that's like, decent.
I'm sure. Yeah, people will take a DR85 link. And it also got a DR70 link, but that was from the press release that we wrote, so I don't really count that. So all in all, it was $52.50, about a day and a half of my time, and one DR85 link. I imagine that's probably profitable. Mm. And the stuff we did, what, even though it was time sensitive, it can still pick up links in the future. I don't think it's the type that will get loads, but I imagine it, I'm almost certain it'll pick up four or five throughout the rest of 2022.
Gotcha.
There's just the opportunity cost, I guess, of I could have been doing something else for a day and a half. Would I have done something more profitable than that? I don't know. But yeah, the reason that I wouldn't have outreached to the design sites for this is because even though we did design like a stats and stuff in a thing, that's not a design piece. You've just designed something nice. The reason I outreached to the design site is we created something, or we designed something that it was art. It was design in itself. The whole content was, look at this cool image, or look at these cool images. So that's why I outreached to design sites, but I'm not going to outreach to design sites with data backed or data led campaigns. campaigns.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And I actually want to, before I actually went on, because I know you're dabbling in a bit of YouTube now to kind of diversify a bit. And you mentioned about for that a day and a half, you could have been doing doing something different or something better or more fun. So what does a day in the life of Luke Jordan then look like if now you're pretty much, I guess you could say, hands off in terms of writing and publishing. So then what does your day consist of in terms of running the site?
Well, I definitely haven't got used to being hands off on the written content yet. And there is still a bit of transition, like a bit of handover stuff. So I'm still getting my guy used to hiring people and just learning how we format posts and publish posts and stuff. But going forward after this, I think I will personally be making probably one video every couple of weeks, something like that, just to help. So we have a couple of channels at the minute. One is like an affiliate focused channel, which is the smaller of the two. And then we have an info channel, which has been taking off quite well. It's got like a few thousand subscribers, managed to do a decent amount in ad revenue to break even in 1 month. It's dropping off again now, but I want to do what I can to try and boost those channels without committing too much of my actual time to it, because my time does need to be spent elsewhere. But I think it's still a decent use of my time to try and give them a push, because one person making videos on a channel can't output a lot of stuff. Like, it does just take time when you're trying to make good videos that are well researched, well edited and stuff. It takes time. So I want to do one video every couple of weeks, let's say, across the two channels that we have. I will be looking to like make small improvements to our website, so we don't even have a search bar on our menu, for example, or anywhere on our site. So just simple things like that, which have taken a long time to implement, but we have to design it in wireframes and stuff, and it's not as straightforward for me, who can't code, to add stuff. I want to start building an email list, which isn't something we have, so I want to start getting email opt-ins into loads of our posts and the content upgrades. I think that's what people used to call them. I got no idea if that's still still a thing, or if that's what people call them. Yeah, well, you know where people opt in and they get sent something.
Even if it's not, you're bringing it back. So either way, it works.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's, content upgrades are a thing again in 2022. So YouTube, email. I want to do more creative campaigns. So all the success we've saw with creative campaigns so far has either been last year or this year, but it's still our campaigns from last year that are generating the links. So I want to get more creative campaigns going live, because we haven't had much time to do many this year with me managing the team and growing YouTube and everything else that comes with it. So I don't know if I can give you what a typical day looks like, because every day is different. I am
a bit of everything.
A generalist. Yeah, I'm definitely a generalist, not a specialist. And I do like to try and mix it up. I never have a plan for the month. I never really have a plan for the week. I do try and plan the main things that I want to get done in a week, which will usually be two or three things. But other than that, I just wake up and I'm like, oh, what should I do today? Let's try and grow this website somehow.
Nice.
Yeah, sorry, all I can't give much actionable advice, I'm afraid, on a good day-to-day.
Well, the strategy. Actionable advice is to have your hands in a few different pies, so you can at least understand what's going on in all different parts of your business, you know. So if you are outsourcing like you are with a lot of things, then at least you know what you're looking for and you're not going in blind and you end up hiring someone, you know, doing a horrible job or something like that. I want to actually dive into a bit of your YouTube as well, because it sounds like it's still semi-new. What was the reason for going down or starting the YouTube on top of such a successful website?
Many people look to diversify. Well, in fact, everyone pretty much looks to diversify, except for me. For some reason on this project, I'm like, no, we are focusing on this, so for all of 2021, or right up until November of 2021, it was, we do info posts, and that's it. We do a couple of creative campaigns, but Like, that's what we do. We don't do anything else. So we don't touch socials, emails, any of the platforms, any of the type of content. We don't do news. This is what we do. And then I suppose a lot of people do that as well. They have niche sites where they just do their keyword focused content and they churn that out. And then once it reaches a certain stage, rather than do what we did and think, let's branch out into YouTube, they will start a new domain and start doing the same thing all over again. So that's the reason that I started YouTube, is because I wanted to start to diversify and start to grow our brand so it didn't rely completely on Google, even though YouTube obviously owns Google, but different algorithms, hopefully, will keep us somewhat secure if we can grow the YouTube channel enough. If the website goes down, then hopefully YouTube can help us. But ultimately, what I'm trying to do here is grow an insanely big brand that spans multiple channels and has an audience that know the site. They don't just go to Google and land on the site. They know of the site. They come to us looking for stuff before we've written it, almost. Like, they're waiting for us to publish. They're engaged with us on multiple channels. That's what I want to create, because I don't really, even though I love doing this, I don't really have an interest, or I don't get any enjoyment or satisfaction out of just churning out content. I can do that in small doses, but if I had 10 websites and I was just churning out content across them all, I would quickly lose the will to live, basically. Money is a really nice thing, but it's not my sole goal, I would say. Like, I really love the fact I'm on this crazy journey of doing something that most people wouldn't be doing. The goal is just, let's just grow a massive audience and see how many views we can get per month across different channels, and eventually retire on the beach or get a job and have my head in my hands thinking, what was I doing? Why did I make such a terrible decision?
Well, it sounds like it's been successful so far. But you mentioned you have two YouTube channels for the same site. Is it one's the info channel and one's the affiliate channel? Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I heard advice that you should separate your stuff on YouTube, because a really important part of the algorithm is how well your last video did and how much interest your audience had in your last video, or and how much interest they're going to have in your next video. And if we're covering products and then we're covering really specific info stuff that almost have no relevance to each other, really, I'll try and think of an example that I could share. Right, let's say our niche was like auto, like vehicles, like a super wide niche like that. Mm-hmm. It would be almost like throwing up a guide to the 10 fastest cars that... I don't know anything about cars. I don't know why I always choose examples that I don't know anything about. The 10 fastest cars you can ride around on, and then the next day uploading a video that's motorbike-related part review. Like, nope.
Yeah.
The crossover's just not there. So we just separated it. I don't know if it was the best decision or not, but yeah, we have a separate channel for product reviews.
So you have...
That's the logic.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. But you have then... I think you mentioned you have a full-time employee doing the YouTube side?
Yeah, two. I have one for each channel.
Okay. So what I want to ask is then is how are you deciding what content to make? So I'm assuming the info content is literally the blog posts turned into a video, since you kind of have the topic and a lot of the stuff there. But the affiliate content, then how are you deciding what to do there? And then how are you doing that with the employer? Are you having to buy all the products to send to him to essentially review on there?
Yeah, so with the info ones, yeah, we are covering what we cover on the site, but we do want to treat YouTube like it's its own platform as well. We don't just want it to be an extension of the website. So when we start to see interest in a particular area, we do find that we can make videos that we wouldn't have an article on. Can't think of an example off the top of my head, but the stuff that, you know, you're going to cannibalize yourself perhaps on the website by having more than one article about exactly the same thing, but you might be able to make five videos about the same type of thing because people are interested in it. So we do, if we see traction, we will make videos that are only for YouTube, like they're only for views and subscribers on YouTube. But yeah, generally speaking, it is just what we do on the website. On the review side, we haven't nailed this at all. So I don't want to speak with authority here and say, I know what we're doing, because we haven't made this work yet. But currently, the long-term plan is to try and rank for affiliate reviews in the future. And my logic is, if we're known for doing good product reviews on YouTube, that might help. And we embed the videos, that helps the articles rank better. It's more trustworthy. They get more links to the reviews as well. But yeah, I do buy the products. They get sent out to the member of staff, or like they can buy them for themselves and put it through expenses. And then they just test it for a couple of weeks. They might record an unboxing if it's like a brand new product. And then they'll throw a review live, like edited review. How do we decide on what products? That's where I haven't quite nailed it. Obviously, heavily relevant products, brand new releases we try and do. So if it's something in our niche that is a brand new release, we try and get it as soon as we can. We sometimes get the brands to send it to us pre-release, like embargoed, so we can't publish it until a certain date, which is interesting. That's definitely like a learning experience, because we found that brands actually sometimes don't let you publish until everyone's already received their pre-orders and stuff. So people will have it turning up at their door already, and our review can't go live. Supposedly that's because they don't want reviews to put people off if it's got anything wrong with it. But sure. Yeah, I think we need to get better at figuring out what we review. I actually had a call on this today with a friend who was telling me we should just repeat what we do on the website with the info stuff, like what reviews are doing well on the website. We should be turning them all into videos first, which probably a rookie mistake that we haven't done that, to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. Are you then trying to, I guess even with both sides, but mainly with the info side, are you trying to use that as another traffic generator for the website, or you're not so worried about that? That's just, you're just trying to grow the YouTube standalone, like grow the audience there, and they'll eventually come because of the brand awareness.
Yeah, so currently we have like no lead gen or anything like that. We don't really have a reason to send people back to the website. So whilst we do link in the description and stuff, we don't push it. We don't have a reason to say, oh, check out our website if you're interested in this, because if we had something that they would be interested in, we'd just turn it into another video. So we really do want to, as I say, not use YouTube as an extension of the site. We want it to be its own thing. We want it to have its own audience. And yeah, brand is the play. Like, we're trying to build a brand, not just a money machine for the website.
No, I really like that idea. The idea of actually building turning it into a real, I don't want to say like a typical news site isn't a real business, because obviously it can be, but turning into like a real business with brand awareness that has almost like a loyal following. As you mentioned, you want people to find the site, not just from searching a long tail keyword.
Yeah, it's quite funny. I've just realized with you saying that I spend so long trying to get away from the world of work to then come and do my own thing. And now I'm like, oh, actually, I quite want it to be like real work again. I want it to be like a real business with loads of employees. And yeah, it is strange. But yeah, like a traditional business, let's say.
Gotcha. No, I think I've asked you pretty much all the questions that I had and all of them that came to my head. Is there anything else you wanted to add to the conversation before we sign off?
Oh, I feel like I've spoke way too much. I don't...
No, it's good.
Yeah. If people can follow me on Twitter, LR_Jordan, I share everything pretty much that we do in real time. So I don't like to do case studies sort of after the fact. I like to do them in real time, where you don't know if something's going to work or not, and then you can see if it worked. But yeah, I don't know. I've spoke too much and I'm rambling.
No, it's good. The more you talk and the less I talk, the better the podcast is in that way. So that's perfect. That's perfect.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not very nice.
but thanks for coming on, Luke. I really appreciate it. So everyone listening, you can follow Luke. What was your Twitter handle again? Just repeat it for everyone there.
It's LR_Jordan.
Perfect. So you guys can go follow Luke there and see some of his case studies as he's doing them. But thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, cheers for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.